This is KD0CDQ. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday, and the same, 7 p.m. Eastern or 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please contact to our SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, server at either Echolink node number 96140, IRLP node 9614, or All-Star node AST 27404, letting it drop. For those who are interested, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at B-O-I-P, at SCARS, V-O-I-P, one word, that's SCARSVOIP.com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the matter you will be connecting into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at scarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at scarsvoip, that's SCARSVOIP.com, letting it drop one more time. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on the website at www.scarsvoip.com, which reminds me, I just turned on the recording. Please note, for all of our class members and instructors, it's extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our session. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? This is KD0CDQ. At this point, we'll begin. For those that have your books open or are looking at the questions, we'll be starting in the Golf 7 Alpha, Golf 7 Alpha area. So you want to get into it there. And we've got two very excellent hams right here to help you with the classes. We've got one fellow up in Wisconsin and one in New York. So you got a little bit of different flavors in different parts of the country. We will be starting in Wisconsin with KB9EWG. David, take it away. It's all yours. KD0CDQ.
Well, thank you, Mike. Good evening to you, and good evening to all on SCARS. This is KB9EWG, Echo 2289 in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And, as Mike said, we are going to start in Golf 7. Golf 7 Alpha, which is power supplies and schematic symbols. The first question is going to be Golf 7 Alpha 01, and that reads, what useful features does a power supply bleeder resistor provide? The possible answers are A, it acts as a fuse for excess voltage. B, it ensures that the filter capacitors are discharged when the power is removed. C, it removes shock hazards from induction coils. Or D, it eliminates ground loop current. So once again, the question is, what useful features does a power supply beta resistor provide? Anybody want to try any answer or any questions or comments on this question here? KB9EWG.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thank you, Dave. KY6V here. You know, this is such an important question that I just had to put my 2 cents in, David. The obvious answer here is it ensures the filter capacitors are discharged when power is removed. And from a safety point standpoint, I want people to really concentrate on this question. The electrolytic filter capacitors used in power supplies pack a pretty good jolt. They charge up a good amount of electricity. And there are a number of manufacturers out selling us power supplies for our ham gear that do not use bleeder resistors. Let me buy a nickel for a second. And for whatever reason, I have three or four very heavy power supplies here. They're manufactured by Astron, and I'm not picking my hat on Astron because a lot of people are doing this without the bleeder resistors. I've got a 35 amp, I've got a 50 amp, I've got a 70 amp power supply, and they work very, very well. They're very stable and long lasting. But if you develop a problem with the power supply in any of those models or any of the other ones that I'm trying to comment on, you will find that those capacitors will hold that charge for a long period of time. It could be days, it could be weeks, it could be months. So you turn off the power, and you go away and you do something else. You go off on vacation, and you come back. The power supply is not working. So, you know, you take the screws off, and you take the cover off the top, and you better watch out where you're touching, because those capacitors are still there ready to bite you. I'm going to buy one more nickel. I hate to make this so long, but this is important, David. So the proper technique is to have a shorting stick available to make sure that the capacitors are discharged before you get your fingers in there and you're doing any work. If you don't have a shorting stick, you know, you can use a reasonable size screwdriver with an insulated handle on it and bridge it across the two connections of the capacitor, and it will discharge. And I will say this about that when you hear that boom and you see that flash, the first time you've discharged one of these capacitors, you'll never forget it and probably not make that mistake in the future. Go ahead, David, KY6V.
Awesome, very good point, sir, Gordon. My mother tells me stories about when she, back in the 50s, she worked in a TV factory, and part of her job was discharging capacitors. And she said she got knocked on her keister a few times there. Also, you'll find in the big commercial transmitters, they have a shorting stick in the cabinet. They call it Jesus stick. And you go around with the, and discharge your capacitor in the big commercial transmitters with the Jesus stick there. So, exactly. Thank you, Gordon. Okay, the next question in the this segment here is going to be Gulf 7 Alpha 02. And that reads, which of the following components are used in a power supply filter network? A, diodes. B, transformers and transducers. C, quartz crystals. Or D, capacitors and inductors. Once again, which of the following components are used in a power supply filter network? Anybody care to try answering or have any questions or comments on this question here? KB90WG. Okay, nobody wants to take a stab at that. The correct answer is D, capacitors and inductors. So So once again, the which of the following is components are used in the power supply filter network, and that's capacitors and inductors. For the next set of questions, I'll pass them on to Gary. Case 2GA, good evening to you, Gary. It's your turn. KB90WG.
He must be having troubles. David, no, there he is. He's back on. Gary, are you ready to roll over?
I think we're working now. How about that?
Lima Charlie, go.
And the software button wasn't clicking here. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the class. It's a beautiful night here in Syracuse's Outer Comstock section, and following a beautiful day, so a great night to be talking about the things we need to know to get the general ticket. We're going to go to question Golf 7 Alpha 05, okay, which is asking us, what portion of the AC cycle is converted to DC by a half-wave rectifier? Now, here's your choices. A, 90 degrees. B, 180 degrees. C, 270 degrees. Or D, 360 degrees. Anybody want to take a shot at that? Okay, well, let's talk about this. You'll notice that they're talking about an AC cycle, right? And when you're thinking of AC cycle, you're probably thinking of a sine wave, right? That's sideways S. And now all of a sudden we're talking about degrees. And how are you going to turn that into degrees, right? Well, if you've ever fooled around with an oscilloscope, there's this thing called, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, Lesurgis patterns, okay, which will turn, believe it or not, that sideways S into a circle. So if you start thinking about it, half of a circle, right? Half of a wave, right? 180 degrees. And that's your answer, 180 degrees for that. So when they're talking about half wave, they're talking about 180 degrees. Anybody have any comments at this point? Okay, nothing heard. We'll move on to Golf 7 Alpha 06. And it's saying, what portion of the AC cycle is converted to DC by a full-wave rectifier? Okay, here's our choices. A, 90 degrees. B, 180 degrees. C, 270 degrees. Or D, 360 degrees. We have any volunteers for this one?
Six, Victor.
Gordon, go right ahead.
Thanks, Gary. Well, the correct answer is 360, and I was sitting back thinking about what you said. Maybe it would also help the students here if they understood that there is a positive and a negative portion of each cycle of this AC sine wave, okay? So what you're looking at is 180 degrees on his previous question and 360 here, because the first part is only rectifying the positive cycle. You have one diode, and it's coming off the secondary of the power transformer, and it's wired in a manner that it will pass only the positive cycle portion of that AC sine wave. Then you move into full wave, and you turn into using two diodes. You've got one that is going to take action on the positive side, and one on the other end of that secondary is going to take action on the negative side. Therefore, the activity that's going on is full 360 degrees as opposed to the original 180. Did that confuse the issue, Gary? Over.
No, not in the least, actually. It helped clarify it as well. You know, and I think just for the sake of just committing it to memory, you know, when you're thinking of half, it's 180. When you're thinking of full, it's 360. I mean, you can just tuck that away in your memory banks, but that's a great explanation for the whole thing. And I think probably once people get a little more experienced in fooling around with power supplies and building power supplies, it becomes a very easy thing to visualize and to put into context. So, but that's a great way of putting it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. We've got a couple more questions coming up in our G7 section here. We're going to turn it over to David for the next two.
Well, thank you, Gary, and I want to echo your comments to Gordon. That was a good explanation to try to make things nice and clear. Okay, the next section we're moving on to is going to be, we're moving on to Gulf 7 Bravo. Digital circuits, amplifiers, and oscillators. And the next question in this section here is going to be Gulf 7 Bravo 03. And that reads, which of the following describes the function of a two-input AND gate? Once again, which of the following describes the function of a Which of the following describes the function of a two-input AND gate? The following choices are going to be A, output is high when either or both inputs are low. B, output is high only when both inputs are high. C, output is low when either or both inputs are high. Or D, output is low only when both inputs are high. Once again, the question is, which of the following describes the function of a two-input AND gate? KB90WG. Anybody with an answer or any questions or comments?
Six, Victor. I hate to keep jumping in like this, David.
Yeah, nobody else seems to be doing so, so you're welcome to do that. Go ahead there.
Yes, my broadcast training. I hate to hear dead air. KY6V here. I just wanted to generalize on when you're talking gates, AND gates, NOR gates, so on and so forth. It is an interesting field, and it gives you a lot of flexibility in designing and making things happen at the time that you want them to happen. So as David described in this question, the two-input AND gate requires that both inputs have to be high. Now let's say that they're switching between 5 volts and 0 volts, okay? So, or they could be 12 volts. But let's say 5 volts and 0 volts. So if you have 5 volts applied on the first input and 5 volts applied on the second input, then your output is going to be 5 volts. However, if one of the inputs is high and the other is low, or they're both low, you're not going to get anything out of the output. So you can turn things on and off magically by using something like this to your wishes in the design of a piece of equipment. Go ahead, David, KY6V.
Oh, thank you, Gordon. You explained that a lot better. I would be able to, but very well. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to Gulf 7 Bravo 04. Once again, we're talking another gate. This time we're talking a NOR gate. That's November Oscar Romeo, a NOR gate. Which of the following describes the function of a two-input NOR gate? And your possible answers are A, output is high when either or both inputs are low. B, output is high only when both inputs are high. C, the output is low when neither or both inputs are high, or D, output is low only when both inputs are high. Once again, the question is, which of the following describes the function of a two-input NOR gate? That's N-O-R, November, Oscar, Romeo, NOR gate, KB9EWG. Anybody with any answers or comments? Well, I guess nobody's going to jump on that one. The correct answer is the output is low when either or both inputs are high. So the answer is C on that question there. So at this point, I'll send it back down to Texas, down to Gary for the next set of questions. KB90WG.
And greetings from New York via Texas. Us KC2GA, and we're continuing here with section G7. And let's pick up on question G7B09. All right, it's asking us what determines the frequency of an LC oscillator. Okay, we have an inductor and a capacitor creating a resonant circuit here. So what determines the frequency of resonance? Is it A, the number of stages in the counter, B, the number of stages in the divider, C, the inductance and capacitance in the tank circuit, or D, the time delay of the lag circuit? All right, those are your choices. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Okay, no problem. It's when you think about it, the only answer here that directly addresses the question of frequency of resonance is C, right? C, the inductance and capacitance in the tank circuit. Those are the two components that are going to create a resonant circuit. All right, so if you just think of the fact that an inductor and a capacitor will create a resonant circuit, and the values of each of those will determine the frequency, then you've got it made. So your correct answer here is C. All right, let's keep going. G7B10 is asking, which of the following describes a linear amplifier? Okay. A, any RF power amplifier used in conjunction with an amateur transceiver. B, an amplifier in which the output preserves the input waveform. C, a class C high efficiency amplifier. Or D, an amplifier used as a frequency multiplier. Again, we're going to throw that out to the folks listening and see if anybody wants to take a chance at that question.
Your friendly Six Victor.
Go right ahead, friendly Six Victor.
Thanks, Gary. KY6V here. Well, the answer is B in your description. And don't memorize, guys and gals, that alphabetical designator. They're going to change around on your test. So key in on the answer without using the alphabet. But at any rate, it's the amplifier in which the output preserves the input waveform. Excuse me, but let me take you back to your last question also. I just simply want to say this inductor and capacitor business is the heart of the pudding. It is the bread and the butter. It is what makes happen. You use an inductor and you put a capacitor across it, and it tunes to a particular frequency, the frequency that you want. When they say tank circuit, it's normally the output of that particular stage, okay? So if you want to amplify an incoming signal at, let's say, 7 megacycles, you want it to come out of the output tank circuit of that amplifier tube, you want it to be resonant at 7 megacycles. Bread and butter. Call it whatever you will, but that is the root of where it all begins. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V, over.
Again, very well put. You ain't going anywhere without resonance, period. Thank you, Gordon. Appreciate it. We got another couple to go in this section, and we're going to throw it back to David. David, pick it up.
Oh, thank you, Gary. And yes, once again, I meant to say New York before. I said Texas by mistake, but meant to say New York. But anyways, we're now going to move on to another segment, which is Gulf 7 Charlie. Receivers, transmitters, filters, and oscillators. Okay, so the first question in this section is going to be Gulf 7 Charlie 01. Which of the following is used to process signals from the balanced modulator, then send them to the mixer in some single sideband phone transmitters? A. Carrier oscillator. B. Filter. C. IF amplifier. Or D. RF amplifier. Once again, the question is, which of the following is used to process signals from the balanced modulator, then send them to the mixer in some single sideband phone transmitters? Anybody care to take a shot at the answer or have a answer? KB90WG. Well, nobody's speaking up, and once again, we come back to filter. Filter, letter B, filter is the correct answer to that question there. Okay, the next question in this section, it would be Gulf 7 Charlie 02. Which circuit is used to combine signals from the carrier oscillator and speech amplifier, then send the result to the filter in some single sideband phone transmitters? The four possible answers are A, discriminator, B, detector, C, IF amplifier, or D, balanced modulator. Once again, which of the following is used to combine signals from the carrier oscillator and speech amplifier, and send a result to the filter in some single sideband phone transmitters? Anybody with a answer or comment to this? KB9EW. Well, the correct answer would be Delta, a balanced modulator. So there you go. I'm going to send it back to Mr. Gary up there in New York for the next set of questions there. KB9EWG.
Thank you, David. We continue here with G7C11, Gulf 7 Charlie 11. And that's asking us, what is meant by the term software-defined radio, or an SDR? Here's your choices. A, a radio in which most major signal processing functions are performed by software. B, a radio that provides computer interface for automatic logging of band and frequency. C, a radio that uses crystal filters designed using software. Or D, a computer model that can simulate performance of a radio to aid in the design process. Okay, those are your choices. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Nope? Okay. That was pretty easy. I mean, it's right. You get the answer right in the question, right? A software-defined radio is a radio in which most major signal processing functions are performed by software. Okay, so the software is doing the work. You'll have a piece of hardware that it controls. I imagine some of you may have played around with the little SDR dongles that are out there. Or if you're lucky, perhaps you have hands on a SDR transceiver, like a Flex radio or something like that. Really cool stuff. The cheap stuff is cheap. The pricey stuff is pricey, but it's fun to play with. And you can also do other things with them. just not as a radio alone. One of the ways to use those dongle type radios is as a pan adapter, taking the output of your transceiver and putting it on a screen. It's really pretty cool. So a lot of things you can do with them. It's a lot of fun to play with. I enjoy it. I have a couple of those, and it's fun to mess around with. Maybe one of these days I can rob a bank and get a flex. I don't know. Let me buy a nickel here.
Six, Victor. Well, you had me laughing a little bit. You know, I am dongle poor. I've got so many dongles around here hanging from here to there on USB ports that it looks like Wart City. I just want to interject a thought. I was thinking about what's going on here at the moment. And, you know, the students could help themselves a lot in a lot of these questions that we're posing here, particularly this evening. If they would spend a minute or two to look at what really happens in a heterodyne receiver, as an example. It's got major blocks that produce the outcome that you really want from that particular receiver. And, you know, it takes the incoming signal and it has a local oscillator that beats against that, and the heterodyne produces the frequency of the IF, and then, you know, all the malarkey that goes with it. And the IF may have two stages of IF, so therefore there's another oscillator involved, another heterodizing mixing process. And then you gotta pull all of this audio off of this carrier that's floating around in the ether. Now, there's a word that hasn't been used for years, but that's what we used to call it, the ether. To get it down to the base frequency of audio that you can listen to. Well, at any rate, what I'm saying, let me buy a nickel, Gary, is if the students would take just a moment to look at a simplified heterodyne radio as an example and get an idea of mixing and what the stages would go through, I think a lot of these questions would make more sense. What do you think? Over.
I think that's a great idea. I think, you know, one of the things that, and I think going, especially if some of the students are on the side, they haven't had the depth of experience that some of us old coots have had. Because, you know, you can make a radio incredibly simple, right? You can make a crystal radio. You can make a razor blade radio, you know. You can make it that simple that you can make a one or two component, two component device, and pull radio signals into a headset. Or you can make it very, very, very complicated, and have a super heterodyne set with multiple IF stages, or you can get involved with you know, SDR. It's incredible how complex you can make things too. And what Gordon was saying, you know, it's a great idea just to get yourself familiar with the various ways that you can receive a radio signal, from the very simple to the very complex. If you get an idea of how that works, then a lot of this stuff that we're talking about makes a lot more sense. What do you think of that, Gordon?
Well, I don't know. Let's you and I go into business. I think it's a great idea. Over.
I like it. I like it. I need retirement bucks. I want to buy a cup. Thank you, Gordon. And we come to, G7C12. Which is, what is the frequency above which a low-pass filter's output power is less than half the input power? All right, let me read that again. What is the frequency above which a low-pass filter's output power is less than half the input power? Is it A, the notch frequency, B, the neeper frequency, C, the cutoff frequency, or D, the roll-off frequency? Again, let's take a crack at it. Go now. Okay, nothing else. Now, it's not the neeper frequency, but it is the cutoff frequency. And the key to that whole thing is the output power is less than half of the input power, right? So it's going to cut it off, okay? So if you can think of that, you see that question with input and output. What do you call that? You know, it's the cutoff frequency, okay? That's what we've got for that. We're going to go up to G8. And David's got one, and I've got one. So, David, it's all yours.
Oh, thank you there, Gary. And I've got one of those STR dongles. I love playing with it. And I've been building a crystal radio, so, radios will be a lot of fun, especially building hand there, so. But, yeah, on with the question here, which is going to be, we are in G8. And carriers modulation, AMF and single band modulation, envelope, digital modulation, and overmodulation. And my question in this section is going to be Gulf 8 Alpha 07. Which of the following phone emissions uses the narrowest bandwidth? A, single sideband, B, double sideband, phase modulation, or D, frequency modulation. Once again, which of the following phone emissions uses the narrowest bandwidth? This is KB9EG. Anybody with a answer or comments on this question here? Go ahead. Well, nobody wants to try that one. Okay. Well, it certainly would not be B, which is double sideband. I don't think double would be narrower than singles. Phase modulation, nope, I don't think so. That's that's actually very similar to FM, which is frequency modulation. In fact, a lot of your radios actually use phase modulation, and they're just calling it FM there, so. The correct answer would, of course, be single sideband, which is the narrowest bandwidth, which uses the narrowest bandwidth. Of course, you know, you're suppressing the other sideband and the carrier, so you're using just a single sideband there. Hopefully that helps with the answer there. And the final question on tonight's session belongs to Gary up there in New York. Your turn, Gary, KB9EWC.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. We're going to G8B03, and this refers to something that both Gordon and I were talking about a little bit earlier. All right, and that says, question is asking us, what is another term for the mixing of two RF signals? Is it A, heterodyning, B, synthesizing, C, cancellation, or D, phase inverting? Anybody like to take a stab at that? Okay, nothing heard. The correct answer here is A, heterodyning. Now, what does that mean? It's the mixing of two signals, and the reason we do that without getting into a very lengthy discussion, we mix two signals to get a stable third signal that we can further refine and amplify, okay? That gets very complicated. So keep that in mind. When we mix the two signals, we're creating a third signal that we can manage better. One way of tuning a radio, matter of fact, all the early radios right through the 30s, I guess, were what was called tuned RF. It was just basically an amplifier that had a tuned stage in front of it, and you were able to tune a very broad signal. Which actually sounded good and was very sensitive, but the problem with it was you had two frequencies close to each other, one would swamp the other. So they came up with this idea of heterodyning a signal where you can have a controllable bandwidth and separate close signals and obviously enhance them in other ways too. And that became the receiver of choice after that point. So that's that for that. Any final thoughts before we throw it back over to Michael?
Six, Victor. Have I ran out of my check-ins?
No, you've got that lifetime supply. No problem at all. Go right ahead.
Okay. Two things, Gary. Number one, on your heterodyning question here, if you do a little research on it, guys and gals, you'll find out the formula is quite simple. You take two frequencies that are different, and you mix them together, okay? When you do that, that mixing process, it produces two additional frequencies. One being the sum of the two original frequencies, and one being the difference of the two original frequencies. Okay? So, by knowing that, if you pick the right combination, the right oscillator frequency to mix with, let's say, the incoming signal on the receiver that you are transmitting from somewhere, if you know the formula there, you can pick either the upper or lower quadrant, the sum or the difference, and use that frequency to send that signal to, let's say, an IF channel. So that's the way it goes. Let me buy a nickel. I'm going to bore you to tears here for a moment, Gary. Before you close it out and turn it to Mike, in my review of the question pool that was set up for the students tonight, some 60 questions, I don't know exactly what the count was. There was one question that caught my eye that we haven't covered tonight. And it is specifically Golf 8 Bravo 07, G8BO7. Now, I'm not going into a lot of rhetoric on this, but the question read, what is the frequency deviation for a 12.21 megahertz reactance modulated oscillator in a 5 kilohertz, deviation 146.52 megahertz FM phone transmitter. Now, isn't that a mouthful, guys? First of all, I think that the verbiage on the question could be improved on. But basically what they're saying, let me buy a nickel, basically what they're asking is what is the original deviation width or what is the deviation of the original oscillator at 12.21? Now, I can tell you, you got to get in a little math if you really want to get to the answer to this. But if anybody would like to look at this question, and if they have any question that they would like to ask about how to solve it, just send us an email at voip.com, and we'll get in contact and we'll work it out. Mathematically, it's not bad, but it's involved. It's multiplication, it's division. You have to know what figures to plug in where, etc., etc. That one just stuck out like a sore thumb to me, Gary. KY6V, back to you. Over.
Well,
I don't know what happened. I heard a blurb there, Mike, and oh, there he is. Now he's back. What are you doing up there, jerking on your ISP line? Over.
No, you know what it is. I think I know what it is. I'm on the Mac in the living room, and the Echo Mac program is 32-bit, and it doesn't like playing on the 6-bit Mac, and it does funky things occasionally, and I think that's what was going on tonight with it, too, because I can see everybody, and it's looks like it's functioning and everything, but when you go to press the transmit, it just sits there, or else you'll end up getting this really funky-looking error message, so it's and I don't think they have a 64-bit version of this program, so may have to just switch over to one of Windows machines.
Okay. Well, you're back. Any rate, make the offer to the guys on particularly that question or any question that they've got that they're pondering and having some trouble with. Let us know, and we'll work it out with them. Go ahead, Gary, over.
Well, thank you, Gordon, and just to reiterate, if you want to find out what the answer to that question is or how to go about answering that question, the methodology for that, just write, and we'll set you straight on that. Or any other question that might be hitting you scratch your head or sense, give us a shout, and we'll try to get you thinking straight on that one, too. Also, you can send 10 cents to the Merkle Press. No, let's go back to Michael for the wrap-up.
Yes, those were not the simplest question tonight. You know, I was looking at it objectively, and a lot of this stuff we kind of tend to forget. At least I do. But it was very, very well done tonight. I appreciate that very much, Gary. And it's so good to have Gordon aboard, because there's things that would fly right over our head, under our feet, where it is, but wasn't it for Gordon pointing out more detail that, you know, we might not catch when we're going through the questions. So very nicely done tonight. I do appreciate it. And we're coming close to a close. We've got just two more sessions. And it looks like I'm involved in them. So it'll be Rick, who is also in Texas. He's in Houston, north of Dallas and Fort Worth, so we're about 400 miles apart. This state's too big. You know, I should have chopped it up when I had a chance. Well, anyway, we'll both be here next Sunday evening, August the 25th. I'm reading on paper here. I don't know if it really is. August 25th. And we'll be starting the G8 category, G8 and 9s, and eventually we'll get to the G0s. So we'll be here Sunday and Tuesday evening. We'll be here at the same time. It's, 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll put it that way. We're just 6 p.m. here. Jump on this end. And we'll be covering it. It'll be your instructor will be NC5IR, Rick. Or should I think it's Rick because he would go. And I'm KD0CDQ. Mike works with me. I think this is very beneficial. Even if there wasn't many people listening tonight, this is still recorded, and it's somewhere folks can get to it, letting it drop. I don't know who that alien was, but folks can get to this, of course, so easily by going on the Internet, and the Gordon has done such a fine job of putting the audio on there that they can go on to the SCARS website and get these questions and get the answers. I don't think they're the simplest questions at all. I'm looking at these, I'm looking at them objectively, that if somebody didn't study, they wouldn't have a clue what they're talking about on these test questions, I don't think. It's just not a thing that you can reason. You have to either know it or not know it. Okay, are there any other comments anyone would like to make? We still got a few minutes here. Close to the top of the hour, I have to jump on a 2-meter net, and I'm following it with two HF nets. I'm trying to bring people together, so the way to do that is jumping on different bands and frequencies and seeing who can reach who. Again, this state is kind of long. It's over 500 miles long. I don't know how wide it is. I don't know. I haven't walked across it. It's pretty wide. So we're covering a lot of territory, and it seems that most folks here in Texas use the 2-meter, 70-centimeter. Not so many are into HF. I don't know why. I'm not going to make reasons. I don't know why. So we're going to see who has HF. I've had responses from a number of people, so we'll see who's really going to be there tonight and see who I can reach. I don't know how far I can go. So anybody have any questions? The recording's still going, so it'll be part of the testing. Does anybody have any? Would you like to make any more statements, Gordon or David or Gary? Please go ahead now. KD0CDQ.
Well, I was going to add something. You were talking about heterodyning over there. If someone's really hear what a heterodyne sounds like, if you ever been listening on a repeater and two stations will key up at once, and you'll get a bit of a noise in there which makes the two signals, unless one station or the other captures, and which capture can be possible on FM there, but two stations mixing and you get a noise in there, a whine. That would be a heterodyne whine. The two signals mixing together causing that heterodyne whine there. So that's just, one possible example of a heterodyne there. Back to you there, Michael, KB9EWG.
Okay, I'm going to bail. I've got 4 minutes, and I've got to get from my study where I'm using Echolink and get out in the garage. That's about 100 degrees. Get out of the garage and jump on the 2-meter and the HF rig out there. So we'll see how it goes. Take care, everyone. I look forward to you all next Sunday evening. 0CDQ. God bless.